Let us continue with the topic of how to meditate. And just as a regurgitation, meditation is in two parts: calming down or stabilization, introspection or contemplation. Stabilization is in three parts: counting, following, and stabilization itself. That is, counting, following would lead to stabilization or calming down the mind and relax the body. And then there is introspection. Introspection is to introspect, contemplate within. So it includes introspection, turning, and purification. These laid out the format of the whole picture of meditation in one slide, lays out a picture. And then we say, okay, how do we prepare for it? What is the actual process involved? How do we do it? So the actual process involved, we say, of course, the sixth aspect, counting, following, is the preparatory part. Prepare for it, preparation. Stabilization, introspection, and turning is the actual cultivation of it. And then there must be realization according to cause and effect. Preparation, cultivation is the cause. Realization is the effect. In everything, according to the concept of conditionality, causes, cause with conditions leads to effect. So preparation, cultivation, and realization. This is the process itself. And of course, even before preparation, there is something that we already talk about, and we call it the prerequisites of meditation. It's just like when you go to university, you have to have certain admissions requirement. There are certain prerequisites that you have to fulfill in order to be a registered student. If you don't have those prerequisites, you are probably just like a sit-in student. There's a difference between a sit-in student and a serious registered student, right? A sit-in student, he doesn't have to go through examination. He doesn't have to buy a textbook. He doesn't have to attend a lecture. It's different. A sit-in and a registered student is different. What are these prerequisites? We need to mention some of these prerequisites, right? We said we have at least five prerequisites. The first one is observance. That is before preparation, right? Prerequisites before, even prepare yourself. You need these requirements in order to sit, in order to meditate. What are these requirements? First one, observance of moral precepts. In other words, you have to have a high moral standard to qualify yourself for meditation. If you are involved always in killing, lying, sexual misconduct, cursing, foul languages, greediness, hatred, jealousy, you better polish those up before you're required, before you sit in the meditation. You have to have very basic. You have to be a good person first. Observance of moral standard or moral precepts. We don't want to go into details, of course. Moral precepts, that's a lot. Second is, you go to a habitat that is quiet and peaceful, a venue, a location. You can't sit, meditate in the middle of a road, a cross section of a road where cars are always going by. You can't meditate in a party. You can't meditate in a theater house, in a casino, so to speak. So you have to go to a habitat that is peaceful and quiet. Not easy. Even at home sometimes, depends on how many family members you have. If you're all by yourself, it may be easier. But if you're all by yourself, when you go home, what do? You click into your TV, you click into your WhatsApp, your iPhone. It's not peaceful at all. The third prerequisite is, stop all other activities that are not associated with the meditation. So if you are in meditation, you can. I want to do a yoga practice. I want to do a qigong. I want to do a kung fu. I want to do a calligraphy. I want to go do, so to speak, they beautify the name. You involve with flower zen, tea zen, walking zen, oh, all kinds of zen that you attach a word to. Is that meditation? Or even party zen, music zen, lots of zen. Okay, so you have to stop other activities and just concentrate in meditation. Number four, simple food and living. Simple food, simple living. Regulate your good habits. You don't go to sleep at 3 o'clock playing your computer games until 3 o'clock in the morning and then get up at 12 o'clock and then you do meditation. You're upsetting day and night. You're disrupting day and night. Your system synchronizes with the natural phenomena of day and night. Don't turn your day into a night and night into a day. Don't turn your body that should have been living in the daytime, you're living in the nighttime, and nighttime in the daytime. Okay. Number five, accessibility to genuine teacher or teaching. You gotta have a genuine, authentic teacher or genuine, authentic teachings, whatever. Sometimes you may not have a teacher, but at least you have to expose yourself to the right authentic teaching. So don't go to a teaching that is not appropriate, to a teaching that is not taught by the Buddha, that is something else. So these are the five prerequisites. And I hope you do have those prerequisites. Okay, so this is just a repeat and a regurgitation. And last time, 3 lectures ago, we were talking about turning. And some of the devotees in here, one or two devotees in here expressed to me that turning is not easy to understand. It's particularly, you know what is turning? Turning is when you are doing counting, following, stabilization, introspection, you are using the subjective mind, introspecting with concepts and introspect an object. Concepts are object. In other words, you are using sunyata, emptiness concept, you are using paticca-samuppada concept, you are using impermanence concept, you want to purify your mind concept, you are using all kinds of concepts. You're using your breath, which is the external object. You are contemplating also on the flow of the qi or the flow of the breath. All these, your mind is using this to introspect. But turning is something different. You want to get a question, not just query about the object, not just introspecting the object. You want to introspect your own mind. I want to turn back to my mind and say, are you right? Is my mind right? Is the subject right? Because you are using the subjective mind to introspect objective concepts, objective things. Now you want to do it a little bit more detail. You want to get back to the source of the thinking. What is my thinking? How does a thought arise? How does my mind work? So there is turning back to the mind, turning back to the subjective mind. You are returning to the direction of the origin of introspection. Where does this mind arise, this thought arise? One should return to the source, because we've been very subjective, using the mind. Now you want to analyze not only the object, you want to investigate only the object, you want to investigate your own mind, reflecting your own mind. That is what we mean by turning. And I remember one or two devotees told me that it's not easy to understand turning. So I would like to use the next half an hour to take a look at turning again, just to understand it properly. It's not easy to understand because you're analyzing your own mind. You're analyzing each every thought that comes up from your mind. How does it arise? Where is your mind? What is the origin of this mind? So we say, just to repeat last time, we say, the mind that engages, we're now going back to 3-4 lectures ago where we analyzed turning. We want to turn it back again now. There's another turning. We're turning back to a few lectures ago on how we analyze our mind. So the cultivation of turning or returning. Sometimes I use the word returning to the subject to see, hey, are you right? Your mind, Mr. Mind, you are using all these concepts to investigate, to analyze, what is this mind? Where does this mind come from? We say, the mind that engages in introspection, from what does it arise? How does this thought arise? We say there are two probabilities. One, generated by introspection thought, that is to say, the case that the introspection thought arose from a mind involved in the introspection. Number two, generated by something other than the introspection thought. That is to say, the case that the introspection thought arose from a mind not involved in introspection. So there's two probabilities. There's two possibilities. If you study logic and study probabilities, we use the word probabilities, otherwise possibility is the same thing. So it's either, and number one, is either from itself or it comes from other. In other words, this thought comes from itself or from other, right? The two probabilities, it's either from yourself or from other. And remember, we have a conclusion after analyzing all these. I'm just picking up the summary, the conclusion. After analyzing, is it from a mind involved in introspection or from a mind not involved in introspection? We have done it in detail, and our conclusion is none of the above are true. This mind that engages introspection does not arise in any situation at all. The introspective mind was originally unproduced. There is no mind to be found. Of course, the prerequisite is this mind must be a healthy mind, must be the right mind. We already have that subject investigated. Assuming your mind is normal, it's on the right track still, what is this thought? And our conclusion is this mind, there's no existence of a thought, which links up to there is no existence of our body even. There's no existence of this I. Now this is a paradox. And then I said in this session, we're going to explain it in a little bit more detail and see if we can really understand it in a proper limelight, in a proper light. And you really have to think about it with a little bit of logic to understand it. And when something is produced, when a thing, we say a thing is to be produced, in how many ways a thing is produced? Let's put aside about this thought. Everything in the universe, when something is produced, in what ways they are produced? In what way the world is produced, is created? In what way your body is created? In what way is this created? In what way is everything created? How many ways are there for the creation of something or thing? Let's analyze that. And when we analyze that, we have to analyze according to the Buddha's exposition, not according to my exposition, according to what the Buddha said. What did the Buddha say about existence? About if anything is to be created, anything is to be produced, or comes into being, what are the ways that it comes into being? How does our body come into being? How does a thought come into being? How does anything at all, a molecule, comes into being? The Buddha said, comes in four ways. And Nagarjuna, a later philosopher, explained it in more detail according to what the Buddha said into, he expounded it in Madhyamaka Sastra. Now, if you don't understand what I talk about, you can Google it and say, Madhyamaka Sastra. What does it mean? Madhyamaka Sastra is a full analysis of how is this world created? How is anything created? Going back to the source. How is this thought created? But let's, for half an hour, let's bring out Madhyamaka Sastra. It says, everything is not created from self, not from other, not from both, and not from neither. So nothing exists. If something is to come into being, like created or whatever, or to be produced, such becoming, such production, must come from four ways. All these four ways exhaust all possibilities. It includes all the possibilities. Each one of these alternatives includes all possibilities. It's either from a self, from itself, or from other than itself, or from a combination of self and other, or from nothing, right? These are the four alternatives that exhaust all possibilities. Nagarjuna expounded that all these possibilities are not possible, so there's no existence. It's only a false, fictitious, impermanent existence, but you hang on to it, attach to it as, yes, it is there, yes, it exists, yes, there's a man, yes, there's a woman, yes, there is fame, reputation, money, greediness, hatred, suffering, not suffering, happiness. We attach to an existence that is not existing. Many high-level and enlightened monks said, we don't exist, and we don't believe it. What do you mean by I don't exist? Am I existing now? How come you say I'm not existing? They laughed at it. It is very strange, quote unquote, that you are not laughing at it. What are you talking about? You exist and you say you're not existing? We're living in a dream of existence? We used to have a Theravada, very high-level enlightened monk, Punaji, Bantain Punaji, says, we don't exist. We're only living in a dream of existence. But we hang on to everything. We're attached to everything. We're attached to family, we're attached to money, fame, we're attached to everything because we think that everything exists. But actually, they don't exist. But how? We have to analyze it, right? What do you mean by if anything has to be existed, it exists in four ways. It's from itself, or other, or a combination of one and two, or from nothing at all. No reason, just exist. Let's analyze the first one. What do we mean by from self? Now, we have to involve a little bit of logical thinking. In modern psychology, in modern logic, we said inference. I-N-F-E-R-E-N-C-E, inference, or by postulation, or by judgment, or by reasoning, whatever term you want to use it. We have to use reasoning. But then how reasonable is our reasoning? Well, that we have to talk about late in other lectures, about the authenticity of our postulation, our inference of our reasoning. But assuming that we're reasoning it with logic. So what do we mean by something is to come into being from self? And then we say, it is not true that it comes from itself. We say, anything that is to be produced, is to be created, is to come into being from itself. Is it right? From itself. If a thing is to be produced from itself, then it's not logical. Why? Because its production will be endless. So if this can produce itself, and itself and itself, then the whole world will be full of itself and will be endless. But that is not right. How can anything that without other causes, without any reason, without any help, anything at all, it all exists by itself? It all created by itself? It's not possible. Nothing can create itself by itself. Otherwise, it would be endless. So it is not right. It produced itself cannot be right logically. Right? It cannot be produced by itself. It has to be, there must be reasons for it. There must be help conditions. There must be causes, etc., etc. How can it just, boom, it produce itself? If it produced itself, then how many times? One time? Two times? Three times? Four times? If it can produce itself, the whole universe will be all by itself, will be all full of itself. So logically speaking, it cannot produce by itself. Then you say, well, it produced by itself with many helps, with many conditions, then it's not by itself. Then it means produced with the help of many other conditions. And there will be others, right? The other, but to say, if it doesn't produce by itself, it must be produced to be produced from other than itself. A thing to be produced from something other is again illogical, not logical. Because if it is not yet produced, then other cannot be established. Because it's to be produced only when I'm produced, I have itself, then I call other, right? But if I haven't been produced, we're talking about production, producing it, created it. If I haven't been created, and then how can there be an other that refers to self? You understand what I mean? Think about it. Only when a thing has already existed, then there is an other. We call it other. We're talking about, I don't exist, but I exist because of others. How can other exist if I haven't really exist? You can only call it, you can only call other if you have a self. So if you don't even have a self, how can you have other? Plus, the concept of other, to that other, that is an itself. And if we say in itself cannot be true, then how can other be true? You understand what I mean? Now, if you don't understand, it does not really matter. Let us use some symbols to explain it, to help our understanding in a later. Maybe I can use the symbol now just to explain it. The four negations, katuskoti. We say, not P, right? And then not P. We say not P is self and not P is other, right? If it is not P, if it is not P, we still have considered other conditions. I just want to show you the symbolic meaning of this. Well, we haven't come to three and four, but just the first one, P itself, not P, it's not its other, right? Not itself. So it is not P and not P. So how come you say that? We already have said the first one is not itself, and then we say it's not other. Because self only other only happen when there is a self. But we've already have proven that it's not self, how can other exist? If there is an other, then the thing has already existed. There is no need to be produced. If there is other, there's no need to come into being. Because if there is other already established, then you already have a self. Then you call other. This is to prove it by simple. But if you really want to get a full exposition of this, you have to read Nagarjuna's Madhyamaka Sastra. But this is just for the purpose of understanding it. You don't really have to go into the deep logical thinking of it if you believe it. If this is just for people who say, no, I don't follow what you mean. I don't agree. Then you go through the logic. Only for people say, I don't believe in what the Buddha was talking about. Is there any logical reasoning? Then you go through this. If you say, I believe in the Buddha, why do you need to go through this? You understand what I mean? I already believe in it. Why do I have to pull my hair to understand it? Rack my brain to understand. Some people are like that. I want to understand it. I don't understand it. I pull my hair. I'm not happy. You don't have to. It's only for those who question the Buddha. Then you better pull your hair and try to understand this. But if you're not questioning the Buddha, why do you have to go deep into it? If I already believe in the history, Canadian history, that about 20 years ago, Pierre Trudeau was the prime minister, I believe it. Do I really have to dig into the library and dig out all these history books to find out? Only for those who don't believe that 20 years ago, or how many years ago, that Pierre Trudeau was the prime minister, for those who don't believe it, you better dig into the history of it. I'm only pointing this out for people who don't believe in it. So don't pull your hair to try to investigate. And I banged in my meditation, I want to investigate. Some people are like that. They are a registered student all their life. They're only looking for YouTube, for videos and books and books and books, trying to understand this, and he's not doing a proper meditation. If you believe in it, you don't have to investigate into it, right? Only for those who are so obstinate that they don't believe in it. Then you have to, pull my hair into it and I don't understand. And you hang on to the misunderstanding and you don't feel happy about it. To me, I just dropped this. Because I believe in what the Buddha was talking about. I feel it. I'm happy with it. Why do I have to investigate into this? Some people say, if you don't investigate in it, you don't understand it properly. Not necessarily. If I have to investigate every scientific detail of the universe, I'll go crazy. I don't want to go crazy. This is just for people, quote unquote, who gets crazy. And they want to investigate more into it. Then some people say, if it is not from self, and not from other, I know it's a combination of self and other. It's a combination of yourself, and you're dependent on all these causes and conditions, right? It's a combination of one and two. It must be right. Then Nagarjuna's exposition to deny it is, a thing to be produced from self and other is not logical. Only when self and other exists, then the combination of both exists. If one and two is faulty, how can the combination of one and two be true? I can give it an analogy, but that may not be a good analogy. If self is blind and two is blind, how can the combination of blind, blind be not blind. You see what I mean? If both are faulty, how can the combination of both faulty expositions be true? So a thing to be produced from self and other is not logical. Only when self and other exists, then the combination of both exists. But this carries the fault mentioned in both 1 and 2 earlier. So production from both is not acceptable. Right? It's not acceptable. So number 3 is not acceptable, it's not logical. And then some people say, if it's not 1, if it's not 2, if it's not 3, it must be from nothing. From no reason it exists. From nothing. Because self, other, and both almost exhaust all possibilities, and there's one more possibility left. For no reason, for no causes, no condition, boom, it booms into being. And then Nagarjuna in the Madhyamaka Sastra says, a thing to be produced without a cause is not logical because it violates the truth of conditionality. If such is the case, the production will be endless. If from nothingness it exists and exists and exists, then the whole world will have everything exists endlessly, and it's not possible. So these are the 4 reasons the Madhyamaka Sastra to prove that there's no existence. Existence is only fictitious. But we firmly believe we exist. That's our problem. We think our greediness exists. Our struggle for... We don't have an existence, but we struggle for existence. That's our problem. We struggle to exist. And we define this existence as what? Having a family, getting a girlfriend, getting a boyfriend, getting a fame, reputation, a good car, a good house, operating a business that brought in a lot of money, and many things. We falsely, erroneously recognize existence as something that we cling to, we're attached to. That's why we're in suffering. That's why we're in trouble. That's what Nagarjuna pointed out, that why do we attach to existence which does not exist? And in the process of this attachment, we are committing a lot of karmic energy that always pull us in our struggle for existence. So everybody understands what is this all about now? Okay, let's get back to symbolic logic. P is self, for example. Not P is not from itself. Not P, not from itself is other. Not from itself is other. It's not other. And then both P and not P is not the case. We already have proven it logically. And then neither P nor not P is not true either. That exhausts all possibilities. By symbolic logic, therefore nothing is produced. There is no existence. We are only living in the dream of existence. You and I. Not only are we dreaming at night, we're dreaming at daytime. We're daydreaming. We think we exist, but we don't. These are the 4 negations, katiskoti. They're also the four negatives, and that's the 4 positives too. The 4 positives are also not true, but that's something else that we have to talk about later. Now, I have it laid out for you. If you really want to think about it. And my translation may not be 100% right, so I translated from Chinese, but I tried to be as accurate as possible. So Don't blame me for the wrong translation. Translation is difficult. And even the Chinese translation is from the Sanskrit. So I've done my homework. I'm not just talking about emptiness. I've done my homework. So what is the conclusion of turning? Turning is something that is quite abstruse. It's not easy to say, to not easy to understand, because we are at this process, we are going to get back to the source. Our thought is fictitious. Our thought does not arise. It arises conditions only. And of course, some thoughts are authentic and right. Some thoughts are not authentic and fictitious and leading to bad karmic energy. Some thought leads to wholesome energy. Good thoughts. Thoughts of compassion, thought of loving kindness, thought of morality. Those are wholesome thoughts. Thought of cruelty, greediness, hatred, depression, anxiety, fear, jealousy, hatred, anger, you name them. Those are unwholesome thoughts. Unwholesome thoughts will lead to unwholesome outcome. Wholesome thought will lead to wholesome outcome. That is what works in this universe of karmic energy. And because of what we have done, we are rowing in life and death, bury ourselves in the struggle for existence. The time when you know that existence is not true, because you're not hanging to existence, you start to what? To purify yourself of all this karmic energy. You hang on to existence because you're not purified. We hang on to fame. What do we hang on, actually? What does our mind hang on? Let's talk about a little bit more about what we hang on. The eight vicissitudes of life. Astalokidharma. We hang on to gain and loss, fame and ill fame, praise and blame, pleasure and pain. We hang on to the good, we hang on to things we like, we hang on to things we don't like. We're attached to them. And we don't have time for this in this session. Maybe we'll go on to the eight vicissitudes of life in the next session. In our existence, we hang on to this. We think we exist. It's a chain effect. We think we exist. We struggle for this exist. And in the struggle for existence, we hang on to what? Gains. We hang on to gains. We hang on to fame. We hang on to praise. We hang on to pleasure. Because we think we exist. Because of this hanging on, clinging, attachment, we create bad karmic energy that pull us down in life and death. The Buddha said, don't hang on to these. But we don't believe it. The Buddha said, because you don't exist. Because we don't exist. We don't exist. We exist in this world, but we only exist fictitiously, for temporary time, for short period, in a world of changeability. We have to transcend this kind of existence. We have to transcend this kind of existence that is creating a lot of bad karmic energy and lead us into suffering. How do we get away from this? We'll go into next time.